How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this beautiful Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's time to talk a little NFL Combine. And to help us do that, we're going to bring in our friend Michael Middlehurst-Schwartz from USA Today. And Michael, first off, let me say, obviously, we had a lot going on yesterday with the tornadoes coming through our area. You were originally scheduled to join us yesterday, so thanks so much for being kind enough to rearrange your schedule and come on with us here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. And obviously, some intrigue around here out of Jared Pinkney out of Vanderbilt and Jawan Jennings out of Tennessee, neither of which, from a measurable standpoint, had good days at the NFL Combine. How much do you think that's going to hurt those two guys specifically once the NFL draft comes around?
I think it could end up hurting them. I think for Pinkney, he's an interesting case just because the tight end class really isn't that strong. You don't have any surefire guy to even go in the first two rounds, really. So you also saw at the Combine a number of other tight ends struggling, so it was kind of an across-the-board effect, but it obviously continued kind of a disappointing trend for him just in terms of the last year or so, and just not showing off that NFL level athleticism, looking a little bit rigid. So he still has a good chance to land with a team that looks for that big bodied skill set, but it might be a little bit longer of a wait than he would have hoped for. And then for Jennings, I think it's a little bit different case just because this wide receiver class is so loaded and you have so many athletic options in the first three rounds or so. So posting the subpar 40 time and vertical leap are going to raise questions about exactly what role he can fill in the NFL. That doesn't mean that he can't find success there, but it's going to raise a number of questions of how do you utilize this guy.
Yeah, I really think Jennings shouldn't have run. He should have just, gone at his pro day and left it at that. But another Vanderbilt guy who really intrigues me, Michael, guy I think has been underrated, and I think he would work well staying here. But Keyshawn Vaughn at running back, what do you think about him, and what do you think about his prospects here moving forward?
Yeah, he's an interesting package. I think you saw him, fare decently at the Combine, sort of mostly what we would have expected, a pretty, well-rounded performance, but nothing completely eye-popping. He's probably, a little bit behind that, first group of running backs that is able to boast those, really great athletic traits of Wisconsin's Jonathan Taylor and Ohio State's J.K. Dobbins and so forth. But, he's got a pretty intriguing package as a runner, particularly in a zone running scheme. So I think that he's, maybe that sort of backup developmental option that you look for on day three, and then, he gets in the right scheme and, he can do some things. But his pro future will depend a lot on team fit.
Michael, when you look at the Combine as a whole, obviously, front office staffs and general managers, they've got a lot to weigh when it comes to determining how much value to put into to selecting a player in the draft. How much can a really good day at the NFL Combine really change where teams have these prospects in their draft pool? And conversely, how much can a really bad day go the other way? Like, how much stock do you think NFL GMs put into the measurables at the combine?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a mixed bag. I think that, for one, the on-field workouts are only part of the combine picture. A lot of times the medical evaluations as well as the team interviews are really what teams are placing a lot more weight on. But as far as the on-field workouts, I think that it kind of depends on what caliber player you're dealing with. I think that if there was someone like Jennings or Pinkney, where particularly Jennings, where he was able to produce on the field, in a conference like the SEC, and those numbers come up, then you kind of have to have the conversation, what does this mean? You know, is this a guy that we're confident he can, you know, continue this production despite not having optimal NFL athleticism? And what does that mean for how much we value him? So, on the flip side, if there's someone who comes out of nowhere to do great athletic testing, you know, that can be promising, but if it doesn't show up on tape, it doesn't really mean a lot. And, you know, Bruce Arians had a quote about this at the combine of, you know, it's great to have 4.4 speed, but if you're a 4.6 guy on the field, you know, there's nothing that NFL teams can really do with that. So I think it's mostly just that, it can help players, especially if they're really good players who end up with elite testing, or, you know, players who are kind of on the fence who end up with bad testing can be hurt by it. But you really have to look at the complete package.
Michael, what did you think of the move to prime time for the testing? We're stuck with this, aren't we?
Yeah, I don't think that's going anywhere for a little while. It obviously was a pretty big shift in the schedule. You saw a number of players pull up with hamstring injuries and other issues, and also just saw various players sit out some of the testing because, you know, this is essentially a pilot program of you're trying to figure out how to, you know, conduct all of your interviews and, you know, be up all day and then be waiting to test until well into the evening. So, I don't think that it necessarily is the best format for players, and in some cases teams as well. But, you know, it's the NFL Combine and the NFL Draft are big business now, and there's plenty of demand to watch those drills in prime time. So, yeah, like you said, I don't think that's going anywhere for the foreseeable future.
Michael Schwartz on the line with us from USA Today. Michael, last thing for you here. Jalen Hurts is kind of an intriguing guy, obviously familiar to fans around here from his time at Alabama, but making the shift to Oklahoma last year, had a really productive season. Strong showcase for him in the 40-yard dash and the broad jump at the combine. What do you make of Jalen Hurts as an NFL prospect at the quarterback position?
Yeah, I think he's becoming an intriguing sort of second-day guy, that, you know, sort of second to third round area. Obviously the big buzz in this class is about Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow, but, kind of beyond them and the other potential first-round quarterbacks, you do have some interesting developmental guys, and I think that Jalen Hurts is someone who's starting to pick up steam as, you know, someone you can store for a couple years, maybe see what you have, try to bring him along a little bit. You know, the big issue with him is sort of throwing with anticipation and just becoming a, you know, more decisive thrower early in plays. But you saw him improving his, you know, downfield accuracy a little bit. That's another question. But, he just has that playmaking knack. And I think that teams are, you know, really intrigued by what he can do. So I think that he's someone who you're not going to see starting, you know, his first year or two, but you could see him come off the board sort of in the round 2 to 3 area, and then a team tries to bring him along, maybe see what they have in terms of a potential starter.
Michael Schwartz from USA Today has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Michael, thanks so much for taking time to come on with us this morning, man. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Absolutely. And just an intriguing set of circumstances for some local guys. You know, Jared Pinkney, I think his numbers in the 40-yard dash were the worst among tight ends – at the entire combine. Jawan Jennings, same thing at the receiver position. And look, you turn on the film, and I think both of those guys have certainly had flashes of brilliance throughout their college careers at the SEC level. I do wonder, though, how much those measurables will affect their draft position come April.
Yeah, I'm probably some. You know, it's – I mean, Pinckney is an interesting case because, you know, you talk about the film. There's not a lot of film of him doing much in the 2019 season. Because he didn't get the ball, but I still think Jared Pinckney is absolutely an NFL tight end, like could be a starting quality tight end in the NFL, and I think a lot of Jawan Jennings is a pro too. I really do. He's a great example of the film versus the drills. But it wasn't just running, like his vertical, everything. He came off very unathletic. I really think it was a misplay on his part to run there. I didn't think he would run there. You know, guys run better. The clock's a little kinder to guys at their pro day.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah, and I'm sure he'll run better there. You see it every
He's
year.
He's going to go from a 4.73 to like a 4.45.
Yeah, 4.38.
At Tennessee, yeah. It's going to be incredible how much speed that Jawan Jennings is able to gain here in the next few weeks.
Just cut out carbs for a couple weeks, and boom, you know, he's running a 4.3. Look, he was never going to blow anybody away with his speed, but that's like a number you're like, geez. I'm going to be really interested. Jawan Jennings, as Michael pointed out, the interviews are so key, obviously. And Jawan Jennings, I haven't seen anything on this. I'm fascinated to know how teams evaluated him because he is just personality that takes over a room. And there's no doubt if you're really interested in him as a prospect and you studied him, I mean, he was the heart and soul of that program.
Absolutely.
Even though he was far from perfect and got in trouble and all that stuff, and at times emotion got the best of him, like I could see a team totally falling in love with him. But I also think that right now it's hard to argue that he hasn't hurt his stock or that his stock hasn't taken a hit here.
And that's why I think it's interesting, and I asked Michael about this too, in terms of when you're an NFL general manager, like there's a whole bunch you've got to weigh heading into this process. And sometimes I think there have been teams in the past that maybe let the combine measurables affect things too much and they put too much stock in them. You got to find a balance if you're a general manager of, okay, here were his measurables that he ran at the combine. Here's the interview. Here's, you know, the game film, I think, which is probably still the most important thing to me anyway.
Oh, easily.
I mean, and you have to find a way to balance out all of those things. And some teams do a much better job at that than others. I mean, some teams are so, he ran this at the combine, he's not going to be any good. Like, I don't think you can operate that way anymore at the NFL level.
Right. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of, it's almost like recruiting stars in college football. Like, I'll tell you, all kinds of 1 and 2 stars who are in the NFL and all kinds of 5 stars who aren't. And it's sort of like, you know, Jerry Rice ran a 4.6, greatest receiver ever. I did, like last year, I thought DK Metcalf, you know, was gonna have his stock inflated beyond what it should have been. Because what did he run, a 4.33? Is that right? I think he ran a 4.33. He was the talk of the combine. And, you know, to me, he was not nearly the player in college A.J. Brown was. They were teammates, but A.J. Brown was clearly the better player. Well, he went in the second round. I thought that was high. He had a good year. He had a good year with Seattle. But, like, I thought maybe that it'd be one of those things where he'd jump even higher than that just because teams were enamored with that. He still would have gone lower for sure, I think, had he not run that well. But, yeah, it's really – I largely like to dismiss all those things. Unless you're extreme one way or the other, if you run about what you're supposed to run, go to the film.
Absolutely. When we come back, whether the Titans sign Tom Brady or they bring Ryan Tannehill back here next year, they're going to need a backup quarterback at some point along the way. What's the best route the Titans should go in order to accomplish that? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Join 102.5 The Game at the Walmart located at 7044 Charlotte Pike in Nashville this Saturday from 11 to 2 p.m. We'll be out there giving away prizes and tickets two upcoming Preds games, plus Nash will be on hand from 1 to 2 p.m. While you're there, be sure to grab a limited edition Nashville Predators Dr. Pepper six-pack. Dr. Pepper, so nice to treat you. That's a Walmart at 7044 Charlotte Pike in Nashville this Saturday from 11 to 2 p.m. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, we spent a lot of time the last few weeks talking about Ryan Tannehill. Is he going to be the quarterback for the Titans? Are they going to go out and are they going to get Tom Brady to come in and play quarterback? Well, in all actuality, they're probably going to have to add two quarterbacks to their group this offseason at some point, whether that's in the draft or in free agency as well. The backup quarterback position, as we've learned here in Nashville, has become very, very important over the last few years. There were times where they didn't really have one. No disrespect to Matt Cassel and Blaine Gabbert, but Mariota goes down. Those two guys come in, not quite able to sustain the level of play and get the job done, and the Titans ultimately suffer for it. Fast forward to last year, they bring in Ryan Tannehill to be the backup quarterback, and we know how everything has transpired since then. When you look at the Titans, how would you address the backup quarterback position? Because the mock drafts right now, you know, you've got Joe Burrow, obviously, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert out of Oregon, and Jordan Love, all projected right now to go in the first round. Love is really climbing up with the work that he's been putting in this offseason in the draft process. What's the smartest play for the Titans to do when it comes to addressing the backup quarterback position this year?
It might just be not spending a lot of money, because you might not have a lot.
Might not have a lot of money.
That's the problem. You know, I think it's, yeah, because it's like with Mariota, it was like, okay, you got to get better than Cassel, and then Gabbert's better, man, you got to get better than Gabbert, and then all of a sudden, oh, you have a new starter. I think whoever is your starter next year, still think it'll be Tannehill. Maybe it'll be Tom Brady. When you think about it, all the other investment around there, I think you're probably going to have to. Now, maybe you draft someone. And by the way, Mike Vrabel was asked about this at the Combine and pointed out that Logan Woodside is on the roster.
Yes, he is. Logan, the gunslinger Woodside.
He has
improved.
He's
my backup quarterback.
Well, he has improved. I will definitely say that. But, yeah, I think you want to have another option there. You might, you know, draft someone middle rounds. I don't think – I've heard some people say, what about a Hurts? Could you get a Hurts, you know, in the second – I like Jalen Hurts, and that would be a good developmental possibility, but I don't think that they're going to go high enough to
like,
get
Like, aren't they going to have too many
you
needs
other,
to probably address
yeah, you have other
at that
needs
point.
To me. So, like, I mean, it could be – I mean, you look at the market of – you know, you got, like, your Jeff Driscolls out there and your Geno Smiths. Hey, how about Drew Stanton? I covered him in college, like, gosh, feels like 20 years ago. It almost was 20 years ago. Hey, you know, I mean, could little Bortles time happen in Nashville?
Yeah.
That sounds kind of fun. You've got guys like AJ McCarron. I mean, there are some decent players out there.
I mean, Rexra, we've had the Brady Tannehill discussion all off season long. And we talk about how good of friends Mike Vrabel is with Brady. Maybe just have Brady come in and be the backup. It can be that simple, right? Maybe you can get both of them.
There you go. Yeah, just pay
if
like...
If Vrabel's going to play the friend card, you've convinced Tom Brady to come in here and be the backup. You can split time at quarterback and have Tannehill and Brady, the dynamic duo, on the same team.
Just pay $75 million. And,
hometown discount for Tom Brady. He loves Nashville.
Maybe that's true. Maybe he'll take like $2 million. To come here. Yeah, they're good buddies. Here's another guy on the list of possibilities. Alex Tanny, a former Titans developmental choice who spent some time here. I mean, you got some guys who've been around. Chad Henne, man. I mean, you got some guys who've been in this league. So, yeah, I don't think anyone's going to have their socks knocked off by whoever the Titans backup is next year. You know, when you have to, one, pay a lot of money to a starting quarterback and pay a lot of money to your running back, and we'll see on your right tackle and your slot corner, something's got to give. So, I mean, something has to be sacrificed, and so you're banking on whoever starts at quarterback to not get hurt next year.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think maybe the most likely route is maybe you draft a quarterback in like the fifth or sixth round, and that becomes your backup. And that's not going to be, you know, I think maybe the sexy thing that Titans fans think they should do. But quite frankly, to your point, Joe, I'm not sure how many more options they're going to have. Like, can you really afford to bring in a, you know, it's not going to be an overly high price free agent backup quarterback, but they're not cheap either. I mean, it's a quarterback. So that may be the route you're forced to go if you're John Robinson in the Titans, is to address the quarterback position in maybe the fourth, fifth, sixth round of the draft and just live with the fact that, hey, you know, if our starter, regardless if it's Ryan Tannehill or Tom Brady, if they get hurt, I mean, it's probably going to be a long year at that point, which I think for most teams around the NFL, that'd be the case anyway.
Yeah, and it's just how it is. I'm trying to remember, like, what did Matt Castle make? I mean, Tannehill last year, well, the Titans only paid him two, but his salary was seven. The Dolphins paid five.
Right, and
five.
That was a little bit different of a
that was a different situation. But, yeah, it's a few million. It's a few million for one of these backups. So you may not have a few million, and it's not an ideal situation to have a fourth, you know, they don't have a fourth-round pick, a fifth-round rookie, let's say, and I don't even know who that would be, in here backing up your quarterback. But again, like, I mean, it's some of your spots in the NFL, when you have big money invested in a lot of other spots, you're going to have to gamble a little bit and put yourself out there with some risk. And this seems like one area that's almost going to happen.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we've seen it burn the Titans in the past, but I think we've also seen, you know, Marcus Mariota, that was for a long period of time of his tenure in Nashville, that was the biggest knock on him, was not necessarily his play on the field, but his availability to be on the field. And that's why addressing the backup quarterback position was so important. If you get Tom Brady, like, that really hasn't been a concern. I get it. He's 42. That could become a concern very quickly, yeah, especially at that age, and especially if that offensive line does not improve from a pass-blocking standpoint. You feel good about Tannehill and what he was able to do last year, but he has been a guy that has gotten hurt throughout his career. Got some good fortune last year, really never dealt with any injuries at all with the Titans this past season. Do you feel confident that he's over that at this point? I'm like, this could be a big decision the Titans have to make because, as we said, you know, the backup quarterback position, if you lose your starting quarterback for any length of time, if you're the Titans this year, certainly not going to be in as good a position as you were this past season to deal with that. Because let's say, for like, even if Tannehill got hurt in a game last year, like if Marcus had to come back in and play, like there are far worse options around the league.
You'd been fine.
Not going to have that this year, in all likelihood.
No, yeah, it's hard to imagine they will. And Tannehill blew his knee late in the 2016 season when he was having a Pro Bowl season, by the way. Decided not to have surgery on it, said he was all fine, and then blew it again in preseason camp and missed 2017. And, you know, I think that a lot of people think that was one big mistake he made, was, you know, not having the surgery right away. But that's a knee, and that's always a concern. And then he had a shoulder thing in 2018, which cost him several games and affected him, and I think all that stuff helped contribute to him being out once the new coaching staff came in. It's not a ton. It's not like, I think it's like Mariota's list of injuries is more concerning, I think, especially when you talk about, you know, nerve stuff.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean?
But still, it's some stuff. So you got that to consider. Like you said, Brady's been healthy. But, I mean, at that age, you know, he might just spontaneously combust like a Spinal Tap drummer one day. You know, I mean, just like at some point it could just end quickly for someone that age. So you also have that taken care of. I understand that he eats like one piece of kale a day and you know, works out 17 hours a day.
TB12, baby.
Or sleeps 14 hours and works out 6 hours, whatever it is. I know he's kept himself in great shape, but 43 still is 43 at some point.
Joe, do you have the discipline to go on a Tom Brady style diet for like 1 week? Could you do it?
Well, I'm gonna have to look at the exact menu.
I don't have to look at the menu. I can't do it.
You can't do
there's
it.
There's no way I couldn't do it for a day.
Yeah.
Much less a week.
Yeah, I mean, I might be able to do it for a day. But yeah, a week. That's. I don't think there's any way.
I enjoy carbs too much.
Yeah, like I'm gonna grab a handful of peanut M&Ms. You know, it's not gonna happen. That's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. I actually want to see. I'm sure I could find. I mean, he wrote a book, right? Didn't he write a book about this diet?
Yeah, this is no secret. He's trying to get this out there to the world to help us all.
Yeah,
Tom Brady's a man of the people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm gonna find this.
Maybe that's what he and Vrabel are FaceTiming about, like diet plans. Vrabel doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that follows the TB12 eating plan.
Yeah, I think Vrabel eats more like we do, probably. I'm just guessing. He's made some references to that. Yeah, this is good. I'm pulling this up. We're getting some. I'm going to come up with a regimen here.
Good.
We'll see if you can do it.
When we come back, Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us. We'll get into what's happened for the Predators the last couple of days and where they go from here as the Dallas Stars come into town tomorrow night. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And speaking of The Athletic, let's bring in our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic, also co-host on The Smash Brothers on Friday nights from 6 to 7 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Vingan, what's going on, brother?
Hello, gentlemen. How is everybody?
Doing good. First off, glad to know that you and the family are okay after the scary situation we've been through here in our area on Monday night into Tuesday morning. Really appreciate you coming on with us this morning.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, everything's okay over here. I live in the downtown area, and luckily I suffered no damage to my apartment or anything like that, but it's just crazy to think how close I am to the devastation. I'm sure people saw yesterday on social media some of the pictures that were circulating from the Germantown area. You might remember a place called Music City Cleaners that had its roof blown off. That's my dry cleaner, and I was there that day, and that's less than a five-minute drive from my house. So it just puts it into perspective how fortunate my family is that we came out okay after the storm.
No doubt about it. Adam, we've been talking about the Preds all morning long here, and a tough loss last night in Minnesota. And we knew last week, you know, they had just beaten Columbus and Ottawa, but we knew the competition was about to step up. They get the dramatic win in overtime against the Flames. But they are 1-3 in their last four games against teams that are also right there with them fighting for playoff spots or ahead of them in the playoff race, like Edmonton and Colorado were. What have you made of this last four-game stretch the Predators have played, and how concerning is it that they've come out of it 1-3 against these other playoff teams?
Well, to put it into perspective, they were 0.1 seconds away from it being 0-4.
Yep.
I mean, we talk about how great that victory was against the Calgary Flames, which it was, but they were 0.1 second from losing that game in regulation. So they could just as easily be 0-4-0 in their past four games. But, you know, to think about how they've played in these previous three games, you know, I think they played well enough to win against Colorado. We can, of course, talk about the goaltender interference call and whether or not that prevented them from getting at least 1 point. We know how the third period played out against Edmonton. And I think some of that carried into the beginning of the game last night against Minnesota. You know, I think they rebounded over the course of the game, but it wasn't enough. So, you know, you have to wonder, you know, we have, you know, 60-plus games of, you know, of sample to look at this team. And, you know, I talked about this with Chase and Darren yesterday. If you remove the 13-3 start from the Predators season last year, I think they're exactly a 500 team. I think they are 65-65 since they started last season 13-3. So they are clearly the definition of a 500 team. We've been seeing that this season. And look, they're very much still in this race, which is hard to believe considering everything we've talked about. But, you know, that game against Calgary should have been a springboard to perhaps getting this team, you know, clearly in a playoff spot, but, you know, they have not answered the bell since then, and it's very concerning.
Yeah, and we've talked, Adam, just about, you know, changing perceptions on this team. And you're probably quicker to this than I was this year. It's gone to me a little bit like, yes, there are guys who are underperforming their career profile. There's no doubt about that. But this team more and more looks to me like kind of this is what it is versus they just keep not playing to this incredibly high talent level. Like, how, like, did we significantly overestimate the talent on this roster going into the season?
That's a tough question, just because when you looked at this team on paper at the start of the season, there was a lot to like. But it really comes down to what we've talked about a lot, and that's just the relative disappearance of this team's highest paid players. Now, where has Philip Forsberg been on the score sheet? Where has Ryan Johansson been all season? Where is Matt Duchene? I mean, you know, I was, of all of the things that John Hines said after the game on Monday, and there was a lot, and he answered some tough questions. But I think the one thing that stuck out to me was his response to the question about Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. You know, he was practically gushing over them. And in a way, I was listening to that answer, and I was thinking to myself, man, I'm sure John Hines wish he could say that about his top players, but he can't because they haven't played up to that. And, you know, you think about the players that have played and performed this year or exceeded expectations, like Rocco Grimaldi, for example, or Nick Bonino. And just imagine where this team would be if those players were playing up to their talents. This team would, I think, clearly be in a playoff spot instead of just barely outside the playoff race. So, I mean, it's going to make for some really tough decisions this summer. I just can't imagine a scenario where David Poile can be complacent with this roster, and that's a conversation for another time. So, Do I think that we overestimated? I maybe slightly, but I don't think anyone expected all of their, you know, the majority of their top forwards to just, you know, for lack of a better phrase, not show up this year.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic and the other half of the Smash Brothers from Friday nights on 6 to 7 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, joining us here on Morning Drive. And Adam, I don't know about you, and you and I were kind of sitting here watching this together on Monday night. It got kind of uncomfortable there for a minute in the third period, watching Edmonton and specifically McDavid and Draisaitl do what they were able to do against Pekka Rinne and the Nashville Predators. Number one, I guess, what did you make of Rinne's performance on Monday night? And number two, like, where do you think he is right now from a mental standpoint with the up and down nature of this year that he's had?
Well, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that might have been the worst performance of his career. I mean, that was a career worst, 8 goals against. And look, he's had bad performances on big stages. We think about game 7 against Winnipeg. We think about game 5 against Pittsburgh in the Stanley Cup final. You know, there have been bad performances on bigger stages, but just based on what we saw two nights ago, you know, I mean, I think you could say that was clearly, you know, that could be his worst performance of his career. And I agree with you, Robbie. It was incredibly uncomfortable to watch. You and I were sitting in the media room, and as the score kept on getting worse, I kept on saying to you, like, they've got to get him out of the net. Like, they can't just keep him in there. But, you know, something just seems different about Pekka Rinne lately. And I think part of it is, I think he might be starting to grapple with his career mortality. I mean, he hasn't been in the net anywhere near as much over the past month and a half. UC Saros has started the majority of the games. I think it's 12 of the past 18 games that UC Saros has started. He's had some good performances. We think to the game in Chicago a couple weeks ago. We think about one of the games against St. Louis. But those, to me, are the exception to the rule. You know, I wrote a story about it yesterday, which was not an easy story to write. But, you know, it can be argued that just based on a variety of numbers that Pekka Rinne is one of the worst starting goaltenders in the NHL this year. And there's just been a change, I think, in his demeanor. He's still a friendly individual, but he's not as jovial. He seems a little bit more subdued or deflated. You know, I requested to speak to him after the game on Monday. He declined. I think that's the first time he's declined an interview request that I can remember in 5 years of covering the team. So, all said, you know, something just seems off about Pekka Rinne, and I can understand it. I mean, I know that, you know, he knows his career is in the final stages. He isn't naive, but I can't imagine he figured that he would possibly go out like this.
Well, I think his demeanor, too, Adam, probably has something to do with just this season, too, right? I mean, like, Pecorino knows how old he is, and I'm sure as hard as he works, he understands that that position, a lot of guys around that age or younger kind of fall off the table because it's a very, very hard job to do. Very few humans can do that job well, let alone at that level. But it seems to me like, you know, I mean, he's here and he's sticking around because he wants another chance at a cup, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. And so he's also kind of surrounded by this frustrating team. And, of course, Pecorino never would throw anybody under the bus. But you could tell after some of these games that, you know, you kind of dance around the idea of, yeah, I got hung out to dry tonight, because at times it's happened. Like, don't you think that's part of it, too, just the fact that, you know, this season has been so disappointing overall as a team?
Yeah, I do think that has something to do with that. And you're right, there have been times where Pecorino, in his own unique way, has criticized the team's performance. I mean, he is not a guy who is going to eviscerate his teammates, but he certainly has expressed discontent with the play of the team at certain points throughout the year. And you're right, Joe. I mean, he has defied his age for a long time. But, I mean, he's not the only goaltender who's going through this. I mean, the other one that comes to mind in terms of his contemporaries is Henrik Lundqvist. You know, Henrik Lundqvist is going through the same thing right now. The New York Rangers have carried three goaltenders through most of the season, or at least the second half of the season, and he hasn't been getting a lot of playing time. And he has just as many accolades as Pecorino. You know, you can make the argument that, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury is going through a similar thing in Vegas. You know, they just acquired Robin Leonard at the trade deadline. You know, Fleury hasn't been his normal self this year. So, you know, when you look at the people that you most compare to Pecorino around the league, they're also having their own individual struggles. But I do think the fact that he knows that this year and next year is probably it for him, and this team isn't any closer to winning the Stanley Cup. I mean, if I were him, I would be frustrated too.
Adam Vinken from The Athletic and the Smash Brothers has been our guest here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, number one, glad you and the family are okay, and thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
It is an interesting, when you just watch the demeanor of Pecorino right now, and for me, I mean, I totally get it. I mean, this year you thought, okay, you know, you've got a roster coming in here. You've got Duchesne now. Maybe this is the year you have the firepower to get it done. And they're still in the race here. Still got a chance to make the playoffs and potentially make a run. But I think it's safe to say this year hasn't gone anywhere near what anybody expected it to be.
And it is. As Adam brought up, take away the great start to the 2018-19 season. And it's been now almost two seasons worth of just sort of like, you know, frustration, a lot of frustration just because you expected to be elite.
No question. We'll continue this discussion on the other side of the break and look ahead to the game tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. But first, ESPN 102.5, The Game is hitting the road for a Preds game. This year, it's off to Columbus to cheer on the Preds as they take on the Blue Jackets at Nationwide Arena on Saturday, March 14th. The tickets are on sale now. You can purchase those at thegamenashville.com. The deadline to purchase those tickets is 2 p.m. today. So if you're looking forward to going to Columbus, you want to go on that trip on Saturday, March 14th, get your tickets purchased by 2 p.m. today. All net proceeds are going to go to relief efforts here in the Nashville area. A cool thing we're doing here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trip organized by Simply a Fan. Visit simplyafan.com for other upcoming sports adventures. Transportation for the trip provided by Gray Line of Tennessee. We'll be right back on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, we just had your cohort at The Athletic, Adam Vinken, on. And we were talking about Pecorino and just the struggle that it's been for him this year individually, which was kind of amazing when you think back to look at the way he started this season. I think he was 8-0-2 to start this season in his first 10 starts.
And people were talking about, hey, you know, I know he's 37 years old, but, like, does he have another Vezina Trophy run left in him? And it's kind of amazing to think about. That's where we were back in October, and here we are in March. We're having a conversation just about his demeanor and just the frustrating up-and-down roller coaster ride of a season it's been for him individually this year.
Yeah, and we're talking about the end of his career. You know, it's, again, it's not a surprise that it's coming soon. We knew that.
He knows that.
And this is also a great example of how in the 82-game sprawl of an NHL season, just how you forget about what you thought in October or December. You're like, man, how things change. Some things are consistent. Like last year, the Preds' power play woes were an all-year theme. But some things are very different. You point out earlier in the show, this team offensively was just on fire. The power play looked fixed early. It's just, you know, clean up some stuff in the defensive zone and you're going to be fine. And now we're waiting for some of these big money forwards to
someone score a goal. It's amazing how that works. It, you know, I watch and look, you're not going to find anybody, I think, that has more respect not only in their locker room, but in the community, among the media. I mean, Pecorine is about as good as it gets in terms of covering a professional athlete and just how generous he is, not only with other people, but his time as well. So all of us, look, I mean, we don't in the media actively, you know, root for people, but it's pretty easy to root for a guy like Pecorine as an individual to be successful. But having said that, we all knew that, you know, at 37 years old, at some point your play as a goalie is going to drop off the table. I mean, that's not a slight to Pecorine. He knows that. That happens to every goalie in the history of the game. At some point, you just get too old to play at the same level anymore. And I think for a long portion of this year, maybe that's been creeping into his game. I mean, he is 37 years old. Now, he does have performances like he had against St. Louis and Chicago where right. He looks every bit like the same Pecorine that we've always grown accustomed to seeing, but it's just not happening with the same regularity. I think confidence is a part of that. I think confidence in the team play in front of him also has been a part of that this year. To your point, Joe, I think this is more than just individual frustration with how he's played. I think the way the team as a whole has played, and especially when you weigh it against the expectations, not only that we had on the outside here, but also internally in that locker room, that they had for this season, I think that's gone a long way. Those combination of things have been why Pecorine, I think, has been a little bit more frustrated this year than we've grown accustomed to him being.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, I won't be surprised at all if he has some more great performances. They're going to need it. They still have several.
I fully expect he will.
They still have several back-to-backs, yeah. You know, but, like, it's larger sample sizes that you can't ignore. And you're talking 317 goals against, 895 save percentage this year. Those are drastically down from, I mean, go back through every year. He's a 2.423 guy every year. He's, you know, hovering around 915, 920 save percentage. His overall career number is 2.42 and 917. I mean, at this point, 36 games in, guys can sit there after every game and say they hung him out to dry. No one's ever going to, you know, say their goalie didn't play well, but he's missing stuff that he hasn't missed before. I don't see how you can argue otherwise. So does this mean he's completely fallen off the table for good? I don't know, but it's easy to argue that.
Yeah.
It's easy to say, look, it's heading one way somewhat rapidly now.
And Adam Vingan, who we had on in the last segment, wrote an article about this yesterday on The Athletic. And real quickly here, just a little bit of what he says in that article. The numbers speak for themselves. In all situations, Rene has a goal saved above expectation of minus 21.37 and a goal saved above average of minus 15.11 this season, according to Evolving Hockey. Those figures are 47th and 48th. Respectively, among 49 goaltenders who have faced at least 1,000 unblocked shots. He also leads the NHL with 11, quote, really bad starts, unquote, which Hockey Reference, the website, considers to be any start in which a goaltender has a save percentage under 85%. I mean,
you know, those numbers, they are what they are. You can't argue those.
Yeah, and for those who aren't into the analytics world like Vingan is, I mean, it's, you know, it's an attempt to, you know, to try to demonstrate the types of chances you're seeing, because
right.
certainly you can have a night as a goaltender and get peppered, and it's because it's a bunch of gimmies that no one's going to stop. I mean,
right.
on any given night, I think the other night, I'd give half of those goals to his teammates.
For sure.
Of the eight he gave up, I'd feel comfortable saying half of them were just, what is he going to do? But there were some others that were not that. And I know also, if you're a goaltender in the world, you would say, well, when you have a bunch of those, and if you have a defense that you aren't trusting and is turning the puck over in the defensive zone, that makes it more likely that you're going to give up bad goals too, because you're all out of whack and discombobulated. So you can give some of the blame to the overall team play in front of him to an extent.
For sure.
But, again, over the long haul here, you can't argue that there hasn't been a huge step down in performance.
Joe, real quickly, as we wrap up the show here in the next couple minutes, a big test this week against the Dallas Stars here tomorrow night and then in Dallas on Saturday. This is a team and a matchup that has not gone well for the Predators as of late. They've lost both games against them this year, including the Winter Classic. Lost in six games in the first round of the playoffs last year, in, quite frankly, a series where they never had control of that in terms of the way they were playing. To me, it's all about getting to the middle of the ice. Dallas does such a great job of keeping you to the outside. The Predators have struggled getting to the middle of the ice, especially as of late. We talked about the game last night in Minnesota where there was just no traffic in front of the net. Chris Mason brought it up on the broadcast. Dan Lambert brought it up after the second intermission, talking about how, look, I mean, there's no traffic in front of Alex Stalock. You're not going to score goals that way. That can't happen against Dallas, because if it does, I mean, it's going to be borderline impossible for you to generate enough offense to win the game.
Yeah, and it's been pretty consistent that they've just physically have not been able to make enough of a dent against this team. Dallas seems less dangerous to me than they did last year.
Yeah,
you know, like you expect more. Like last year, you're like, you better score four to feel okay against these guys.
Yeah.
And now you kind of expect you might be in a 2-1, 3-2 kind of game. They've kind of changed their identity, and maybe that'll serve them well in the postseason. But two games here, again, I'm going to say get 2 points. It may not be, and that won't probably put you back in the playoff picture, but it'll keep you alive, keep you around. Certainly you'd like more than that. But realistically, not a great matchup for the Preds. I mean, I think that's pretty clear at this point. If you can get 2 points out of two games, then you at least give yourself a chance as this huge road trip from next week approaches.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more about the big game between the Predators and the Stars at Bridgestone Arena. That's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. For Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad and Marquise Munson, we'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on two purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.